Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Maher Hedgley, and welcome to another episode of Business Beyond Borders, where we have made it our mission to talk to global experts, professionals, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and founders from a variety of industries and fields as we tackle the many aspects of scaling an international business. Now, the aim here is to collect valuable insights and be able to share with you guys some in-depth knowledge so that you too can apply the winning techniques and strategies to go global and take your business to the world. On today's episode of Business Beyond Borders, we have decided to flip the script as I get a chance to interview Cynthia Dearen, the founder of Dearen & Associates and the usual host of this very podcast. What we have found working with our clients is that one key area that many business owners struggle with when it comes to expanding internationally is the ability to successfully choose the right market. So if you're looking at entering a new international market, this episode is the one for you. Join us in this first of a two-part interview as Cynthia and I discuss the mistakes that companies make when it comes to market selection. Keep an eye out for part two, where we delve a little bit deeper into the market selection process, outlining what to consider before making the decision and the questions you should be asking to assess the risk and increase your chances of success. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy the first part of my conversation with Cynthia.
All right. Hi, Cynthia, and welcome to your show.
Hey, Maher. I'm well. It's great to be here, although a little weird to be on the other side of the microphone.
That's okay. I'm sure we'll get used to it. As I can see, we're going to be doing a few of these in the future. So today we're going to be touching on choosing the right market, and we're really going to zone in on this one topic and aspect of international business. And I thought we'd start off by maybe getting your thoughts on what you find are the top 3 to 5 mistakes that companies make when it comes to choosing a new international market.
It's an interesting question. I see companies making an awful lot of mistakes as they try to tackle international markets. And we could probably spend a day at least just talking through all the different mistakes that people have made.
Yeah.
What I might do is just pick out 3 of the big ones that I see and the guys in the team see all the time as people are going through this process of trying to scale internationally.
Yeah.
And let's talk about these 3. One I'm going to call the soft focus mistake, one I'm going to call misreading the market, and one I'm going to call launching before you're prepared. So, you know, to pick them off one at a time, the soft focus mistake is really about going into that process of trying to take your company international without having a clear strategic vision in mind. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're starting a business and growing a business in your home country, it is possible, and a lot of people do it this way, that they find that the business just kind of grows organically on its own. You know, it starts off quite small and then it's just like a snowball. It accumulates customers and off it goes. And often that growth happens, as I say, pretty organically, and there's not a lot of reflection behind it. And people just kind of go with it and build on as they go.
Yeah.
That can be okay for a domestic market, but when you go into an international market, the scenario is pretty much always quite different. So whereas at home, you know your customers well and they know you. You know, after a business is a certain age, your brand is well established. So there's this level of familiarity between you and the marketplace. You probably have a great understanding of what your customers want, otherwise you wouldn't have been successful. So it's this very comfortable and sort of intuitive relationship. But when you go into the international space, suddenly that is all gone. So if you go to any market where you haven't spent a lot of time or you haven't lived or you're not from that place, you're going into an entirely different environment. So your brand is virtually completely unknown, especially at the beginning, you know, unless you happen to be McDonald's or Coke.
Yeah.
You don't know the customers very well and they don't know you. There's no trust there and there's no familiarity between the two sides. And that means it's a lot harder to get traction. And what that means is that when you are going into the international space, if you want to do well, and if you don't want to burn through a lot of resources in the process and make mistakes via that trial and error process, which are probably going to cost you dearly, you need to be very strategic about it. So you need to go in understanding why you're going in, what you're going to achieve, how it fits into your broader plan for the entire business, and then how you're going to achieve that.
Yeah.
that's kind of like the gold standard. But unfortunately, a lot of CEOs, even the smart ones, treat going global as this kind of stream of consciousness process. And I think it's probably because for a lot of people, this idea of international is very exciting and people kind of get their rose-colored glasses or maybe their beer goggles on. Mm-hmm. And some bit of their brain switches off and some of their business sense goes out the window.
Yeah.
So, you know, what happens, and it's a bit of a fictional example, but I'm going to use it anyway. You know, guy or girl CEO wakes up in the morning, picks up the financial review, opens it and goes, wow, look, there's an opportunity in our segment or in our sector, in our industry, in China. The opportunity is huge. Look, there are 1 billion people in China. If we can get just 1% of the market, we'll be set. Mm-hmm. And they go off to the office and they get the team together and say, everybody, I've spotted this great opportunity in China. We need to jump on it now while it's hot. And suddenly everybody's out there running around setting up to sell into China. And they haven't done any analysis about whether China is the right market for them, how what they're doing in China is going to mesh with what they're doing in Australia or whatever their home market is, how it fits into the bigger strategic plan. And they just plunge in. And often what you see when people approach internationalization like that is that it doesn't necessarily go very well. You know, it's an emotional decision, sometimes rather than a rational one. And because it's not calculated, you know, mm-hmm. things that are unexpected crop up.
Yeah.
So maybe you go off and you sell into China, and as you go, you discover that you thought you were going to be able to sell at a very high price point, and you get in there and you find that you actually can't do that because the market won't bear it. Or maybe there's a competitor product which is of the same quality but locally made and much less expensive. Or maybe you discover that you thought there was a massive market in your sector, but in fact, it's not as massive as you thought. It's much, much smaller. Or you might discover that maybe, you know, there are regulatory hurdles that you hadn't thought about, and it's a lot harder than you thought. Now, if you stood back and you've done some strategic stuff and you developed a bit of a vision as a first step, then you wouldn't have run into those hurdles, or you would have found out about them before they became a problem. So that's soft focus, going in with these rose-colored glasses and this big kind of fuzzy vision of how great it's going to be when it's not really like that is one common mistake.
Yeah.
That, you know, that we see a lot. Another one that I mentioned that I want to talk about is called misreading the market.
Yeah.
And this is where people don't do enough research. It's kind of linked to the first mistake in a way. Mm-hmm. This is not so much about vision. This is about not understanding the actual market that you're going into well enough. So making assumptions about the market. A really general one might be, oh, this market's just like home. So we're going to be able to take what we do at home and basically copy paste that into the new place and it's going to work. Yeah. Look, there are a number of ways you can misread the market. You can misread it because you think there's a market there. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there isn't. So I can think of a company that I came across a few years ago that was in the hydroponic sector and had massive plans for supplying the Chinese market with hydroponic fruit and vegetables. Mm-hmm. There were other places that they could have gone where there were also significant markets and far few regulatory hurdles to deal with, but this company was determined that that was where they wanted to go. What they didn't realize was that there was no market access for their product in China. And what that means is that under Chinese law, you could not actually supply these fruit and vegetables that they wanted to supply from Australia to China. They just cannot enter China. China doesn't allow that because it wants to protect its own market.
Okay.
And so, you know, they pursued this opportunity a certain distance. Mm-hmm. And they wasted a lot of time and energy kind of thinking, well, we're going to go in one direction, when they should have been exploring other directions. Mm. And they wouldn't have made that mistake if they had actually taken the time to understand the market and realize, oh, actually it's going to be quite difficult to supply if we want to do this as an export venture because there is no market access for that product. So that's one way you can just misunderstand the opportunity. Mm. There are a variety of other ways that you can misunderstand it too, but one I think is really critical is that a lot of people think that markets all work if not identically, then similarly. So they assume that, for example, the market in the UK is going to be just like the market in Australia. You know, okay, people in Britain are kind of culturally similar to Australia. And so what's going to work in the UK or what's going to work in Australia will also work there. And my favorite, very famous example of this is the story of Bunnings.
Yeah.
So unless you've been living under a rock, you probably know that a few years ago, Bunnings decided that they would buy a chain of stores in the UK, which were in a similar line of business. They were a little bit more home furnishings than hardware, which Bunnings obviously is. And this chain of stores, Homebase, was all over the UK. Now, the UK spent that Bunnings, I mean, spent about £750 million buying this chain of stores.
Yeah.
And they tried to cut and paste the Bunnings business model onto this chain of stores that they had bought. Because they thought, well, you know, everybody in Australia likes hardware and people in the UK are going to like hardware and DIY as well. And they just didn't take into account that although there are some similarities between Australia and the UK, there are some things that are also fundamentally different. Things like the size of the houses that people live in, the size of the blocks of land that people live in, the weather. So Bunnings was selling 700-pound barbecues, which would have been great for a four-bedroom spread in Melbourne, and log splitters, which would have been great if you came from Queensland, and tins of paint, which are great for sunny Australian weather, but none of these things played very well in a country where it rains for 9 months of the year, and most people have back gardens which are about the size of a pocket handkerchief.
Yeah.
And so the way that they went about it just showed that they didn't really understand what that UK customer is looking for. And so as a result, 2 years later, Bunnings had to fold that entire operation. They cashed out of it for $1. And they destroyed more, I think it was £1.2 billion of shareholder value in the process.
That is massive.
And this is a big company. You know, this is a company that you would think would not make this kind of mistake, but it's a really common mistake that plagues people of all sizes.
And how would you avoid that kind of mistake, do you think? I mean, if a company as large as Bunnings can, you know, make a mistake to that, you know, as large as that, what did they do wrong?
Look, it comes down to doing your research properly, using a variety of sources, talking to people on the ground and understanding what the customer wants. I mean, the best person to tell you what they want is the person who is going to be your customer.
Yeah.
Really getting in there and understanding what that person who you are going to sell to has in mind, you know, what problems they've got and how you can solve them.
Yeah.
And if people were going off to Homebase and looking for Laura Ashley curtains, and the next time they turned up, it was called Bunnings, and what was on offer was barbecues and log splitters and, you know, step ladders, it's really not surprising that it didn't go as well as they thought it was going to. So doing your research is very, very important.
Yeah.
Getting the views of the people who you're going to sell to is very important. Getting the views of people who understand the culture you're selling into is really important. And having people on your team who understand that culture and how it operates and what people are going to be likely to look for.
Yeah.
Now, there's another way that you can misunderstand the market as well, and that's that you just assume that the business practices work the same way. And I have a story about this from a colleague of mine, Vanessa Garrard, and I know she won't mind sharing it because she already shared it on another episode of this show. Now, Vanessa owns a bunch of businesses that sell, among other things, electronic products. So they wholesale them to other companies. And so if you're listening to this show and you're in Australia, it's pretty likely that you have one of the appliances that Vanessa uses in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she decided a few years ago that she was going to tackle the US market. And she says, look, I just assumed that it'd operate the same way as Australia did. I didn't understand that the way that distribution works is different. I didn't understand that people are looking for different things. So we took the approach that we used to selling to retailers in Australia that had worked so well. We tried to just package it up and just go to the US and do it all over again. And she said it didn't work. when we went in for discussions with these big companies, they just looked at us and said, oh, that's not how we do things. Now, they went down that pathway for some time, several months, and they probably spent several hundred thousand dollars doing that. So, you know, they blew through a chunk of change prosecuting this particular avenue. And at that point, they realized, wow, this is not working. We've burned through $250,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so they actually exited. They pulled out, they went back, they regrouped, they went in and worked out what was not working, which was the way that they were trying to approach the market. And they went back and they found out, okay, well, how do people do business here? And what do these big operations expect? They equipped themselves to deal with it. They went back in, they recovered. They've now captured a significant portion of the market in the States.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they had to learn the hard way. Mm. You know, and Vanessa says, if I'd known what I subsequently learned before I started, I would have saved myself a bunch of time and money and stress.
Yeah.
So that's the second mistake, misreading the market, that I wanted to talk about. The third mistake that I should mention is launching before you're prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this one a lot too. And this is basically where people go to market before they're actually ready, before they have got some key things in place.
Mm-hmm.
Finances.
Yeah.
So really a deep understanding of what financial resources they are going to need over what time period and how they will get those if they don't have them.
Yeah.
And, you know, contingent expenses are something that really throws people off course pretty frequently. So often if the financial analysis is not done properly, there'll be contingent expenses that people haven't thought of and haven't set money aside for. And then when they suddenly come up and there's a requirement for some thousands of dollars and the money isn't readily available, that can cause a lot of hardship and stress.
So it's kind of preparing for the worst and expecting the best.
Yeah, but making a realistic and an informed assessment about what you are going to need financially and then making sure that you can deal with it. You know, making sure that you've got avenues to source money if you find that you're going to need that extra money.
Best scenarios, yeah.
And sometimes it can even be for a good reason. I mean, you might go in expecting that you'll have an opportunity of a certain size, the opportunity with a particular client turns out to be much bigger than you'd expected.
Mm.
And suddenly, let's say you produce goods, you have to ramp up production really quickly. Yeah. You can't do it with the factory you've got. You have to go and get a new factory to produce millions of units. Mm. It'll cost you $500,000 to get started.
Yeah.
And you don't have anything. And, you know, maybe the only collateral you've got is your house. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you're faced with the choice of, well, do I mortgage the house so that I can get enough collateral and security to be able to build this new factory and get going, or do I just say goodbye to this major opportunity which might not come along again? So there are those kind of financial considerations. Team is another area where you need to get prepared. So a lot of people just assume, well, we can go to a new market and we can use the team that we've got. Sometimes that will work, but there are a couple of things there. One is that it's really helpful, especially if you're operating in a country that is quite different to your own. It's really helpful if you've got access to people who are from that country, speak the language, or at a minimum, just understand it really well and can tell you how it works. You know, people who are equipped to deal with the business environment there. And the other thing on the team side is that when you go into a new market, depending on how you do it, it can be like starting a whole new business.
Mm.
And so sometimes what we see are founders tackling a new country without much new team. And it puts them under a huge amount of pressure. So I can think of two that I'm aware of at the moment. One is a great husband and wife team splitting their time between the States and Australia. Now they are running two teams, but even with the teams they've got, there's not quite enough capacity. And that's put them both under a lot of stress. And it's even caused health issues for one of the partners. So, you know, this is a very real situation that comes up. The other one I can think of is a founder who has got loads of business and has started to work across Australia and the United Kingdom. But again, he doesn't have enough team to deal with that, and he doesn't have much team who can help with the management function. And so he's trying to split his time backwards and forwards across the globe. And as a result of that, he's seen a real change for the worse in the culture of his team back in Australia. Okay. And whereas they once prided themselves on being a team where nobody ever left, he says that he's now had significant churn.
Yeah.
And he has pinpointed that the reason for that is because he isn't able to pay enough time and attention to that Australian operation.
Yeah.
And so things are starting to get a little bit out of control.
Yeah. And these are all quite unexpected when you just sort of jump into the new opportunity and haven't really done the research, as you said.
Yeah. And look, you wouldn't necessarily know, you know, people who haven't done it might not realize how much of their time it's going to suck up as they go. And what kind of additional stresses and strains it might put on the team. I mean, even things like working across time zones. I mean, as you will know, when our team works across time zones or with clients in other places, suddenly the day is starting at 8 o'clock in the morning, but it's not finishing till 10 or 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You can do that for a short period of time, but when it's day in and day out over months, that starts to take a very real toll on people. So really important that you have your team equipped as you get in there. And then the last thing I should mention, and I could go on with loads of these, but I'll just pick one more to talk about today. That's having really super systems in place. Mm-hmm. And one thing that founders will find and CEOs will find as they scale up is that one of the things which makes it easy to really replicate your business over multiple geographies is fantastic systems. To flip that round, the mistake is to go in underprepared with no system. So when there are very few systems and most of the information about how things run is in the mind of the one or two founders or a very small team of people who run the place, and it's never been documented, things get out of hand very quickly. So suddenly you've got people in different geographies using different processes to do things. Or you've got new team coming on in one geography who don't know how things are done and there's nowhere they can go and look for it. So they're constantly calling the founder.
Yeah.
And the founder is under this huge amount of additional pressure because suddenly he has to answer all these queries. Mm-hmm. And he can't just say, look, go and look at the manual.
Yeah.
Look at the standard operating procedure, watch these videos.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a lot of founders and when I asked them, what was the one thing that you wish you'd known when you started, or what's the one mistake you've made? A number of them have said to me, I wish we'd had better systems in place at the beginning.
Yeah.
Would have made it so much easier. Mm-hmm. So those are the three big mistakes and the kind of subcategories underneath them. Yeah. Soft focus, which is about not knowing why you're going overseas, what it's going to look like, how it fits into your overall plan and how you're going to get there. Misreading the market, which is not understanding how where you're going is different from where you are already and what implications that might have for the business. And the third one is launching before you're prepared. And that's just failing to really look at the different areas of the company and say, well, what are we actually going to need to tackle this international thing properly?
Well, I think we're going to end it there. You've given us a lot to digest and I'm sure the listeners got a lot out of that. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on before we call it a day?
No, thanks so much for having me on my show.
Absolute pleasure. And I look forward to the next chat where we will again break down some important aspects of international expansion.
See you soon.
Thank you.
Hi everyone, this is Maher again. And just a few things before you head off. Firstly, if you feel you have gained valuable insights from the show, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss another episode. More importantly, don't forget to tell your fellow entrepreneur and business leader friends that this is the best podcast to tune into if they're looking to take on the world with their products and services. Also, if you are loving the podcast, please take the time to rate and review as it's one of the best ways for us to get loads of free value into the hands of other entrepreneurs. And lastly, make sure to visit DearinAssociates.com. That's DEARIN associates.com, where we have plenty of free resources and tools for you to get clarity and build momentum with your international venture. If you go there, you'll find the blueprint to international success, ebooks, our latest blog posts, and more. So be sure to check it out. And until next time, this is me encouraging you to expand your vision and wishing you all the best as you continue your global journey.